This is The Week in Review, and we have lots of news to review with our two guests from different political perspectives. John Sharpless and Joe Winicky are here. But first, we have to review our progress in this half-the-time pledge drive. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, October the 14th. My program producer and director, Bill Martins, joins me for just a few minutes to start because we have a special challenge going on this hour, Bill, to help encourage support during the Week in Review. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Yes, we big hour coming up here for the Week in Review, and we do have that challenge grant, as you mentioned, $1,000. So that means that for every dollar up to $1,000, that $1,000 will be matched. So your pledge will go twice as far.
So that is it's a dollar for dollar match, and Qual Line Fence has donated this challenge grant. So thank you very much to Qual Line Fence. So $1,000, your pledge is doubled up to $1,000. So call in now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge and help us reach our goal of 80 pledges during this hour.
That's right. This is our half the time pledge drive. We usually do this for 12 days, but not this time. We're only doing 6 this time around, and we have to raise all the money it takes to support to raise your favorite program. So make that pledge now. Go online, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Very simple.
All right. Thanks very much, Bill. And I hope that that $1,000 challenge grant is used up by the time you come back at the end of the hour. Let me welcome our guests. Let me welcome in our Week in Reviewers. John Sharpless is here. He is a professor of history at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Joe Winicky, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. And may I just say one quick thing?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Randy Wolf for restoring my faith in life.
Well, how did that happen?
He won last night for the Brewers.
That was something, wasn't it? Love that.
Yeah, go Crew. Go Crew. So are they going to make it, you think, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what's great is that they have to return back home. And if they can just, because they screwed up the other night, but they are a home team. And if we can just get it back into the park here, I think they can win
well,
the series.
Well, I'm a much more optimistic guy than you. That's why I'm a Democrat, John.
Yeah.
And that is that I'm perfectly confident that Zach Greinke is going to get a win for the Brewers tonight, and we're going to have a 3-2 lead going in there, and we just got to win one at home.
Absolutely, yeah. That would be fun.
You guys are don't disagree vehemently on everything, but
you should have seen when we debated.
However, I wasn't planning on this, but do you think all the sports success that Wisconsin is seeing this year with the Badgers and the Packers and the Brewers especially right now, is this unifying our state, Joe?
No.
No, not at all?
No, it's a nice diversion.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to count recall Walker stickers coming in from Verona today. I saw 17.
How many? 17. Hmm. What do you think? Do you think the sports are unifying us at all, John?
I think a bit. It really, for a Wisconsin sports fan, it's a great time. I can't remember a time where everybody's winning.
Because it's never happened before.
And I'm a very, very big Packer fan. I own a share. I just love the Packers. And I never really had, it's funny, I'm a Brewers fan, but I never thought we'd be this far into a playoff. And it's just so exciting. It makes me nervous.
Well, they're a fun team to watch. They really are.
Yeah, they really are. Well, we will. Let's talk about other state news.
Darn.
And speaking of the recall Walker stickers that you saw coming in, Governor Walker's critics announced that they will be mounting a recall effort against him, and they'll start the process of collecting signatures on November the 15th, which would set up the potential recall election in the spring sometime. Is this going to happen, Joe?
Yes, and I think they did it fairly correctly. This whole movement started from a grassroots level from the beginning. It was not politically driven. In fact, if the politicians had driven it, it would have been screwed up. And so what happened was there were a whole bunch of people that were planning on starting this the first day they could in November. And I think it was smart for those that are organized in this effort to wait a little bit, and that's just because of the holidays. And I think you're going to have the Badgers in a major bowl, and you're going to have the Packers potentially in a Super Bowl, so there's going to be a lot of and Christmas and Thanksgiving and all those other things, that it gives them a little time after the 1st of January to make sure that they can get things done, because a lot of people travel over the holidays.
Yeah, so this is a tough time to be collecting signatures, then.
Yes and no. I always found December to be a great time to raise money for campaigns. For some reason, people are in a giving mood. I think they like to say, ho, ho, ho. Unless you're a public employee and then you don't have any money.
Yeah, well, it's the liberals who are stingy. they want to give away my money, but they don't want to give away their money. I think to get to the likelihood of this succeeding, I don't think it'll succeed.
Do you think we'll get the signatures, though?
Here's my prediction on it. I don't think they'll get the signatures because, and I've said this before, I think there's a lot of people in the state who oppose Walker.
Yes.
But they don't think that a policy decision, no matter how much they oppose it, rises to the level of being recalled, which they believe, I mean, you can contest this, Joe, they believe is really reserved for malfeasance and criminal behavior. And just because you don't like what a guy does doesn't mean that you try to kick him out of office. You wait for the next election. And I also think that I know for a lot of hardcore Democrats, particularly in the Dane County area, this issue still burns very deep. But I think for a lot of people around the state, again, even people who opposed him, this has died down a lot. But here's my prediction. I don't think they'll succeed in getting the number of names they need on that petition. But if they do, he's defeated.
Interesting. Because
he will be defeated if they get the signatures.
Well, why do you make that distinction?
Because if they can leverage those names.
Which they could.
If they leverage those names, that means that there is still across the state a sizable hostility to Walker. And I don't think he can fight that. I don't think he can. I think his best, if I was his advisors, I would figure out ways to suppress that recall. Because I think the election will be problematic.
Interesting, because I think it's not going to be that difficult to get the signatures, and I think it is a tougher hurdle to actually win the election. And the reason for that is simply, in these types of elections, I mean, Katie, bar the door on money, we might see $70 or $80 million. How do you spend $80 million on a two-month election
like
in Wisconsin?
If they send it to me, I'd like to try.
would you like to?
John, could I be a high-priced campaign advisor for you then?
If they send me $80 million.
Then you'll hire me?
I'd have a lot of fun with that campaign.
Just say, yeah, it's okay.
I may run from some South Pacific island.
Doesn't it depend on who is going to be the Democratic challenger should it come to the actual recall election? Who's that going to be, Joe Wernicke?
I don't know. I'm not sure it matters. I mean, it's got to be somebody competent. And at the end of the day, I would almost guess it'll be somebody that's not the usual suspect. I think it might be somebody from the business community.
You don't think Ron Kind?
I would actually like that. Yeah. And there's a lot of sacrilege in some of my friends because he is open to free trade. But I think Ron would be a great candidate if he ran. I'd support him.
And that's a big chunk of the state. He's very popular in that district, and it runs across. It runs from the bottom of the state to the top of the state, right along our western border.
And which has become increasingly Democratic, too, that part of the state. And you know, John, outside of yourself, he's like one of the most handsome guys who ever ran for office. So.
Well, he's a very nice man. He's a very moderate Democrat, very centrist Democrat. If you look at his record on agriculture and many other votes, he's probably, while Cole certainly is a very pro-business Democrat, Ron Kind has always positioned himself because that district...
He had to be.
That district, it may have moved Democrat, but it's still a conservative district.
And, you know, I wish some of my friends from the Madison area would understand that this isn't Tammy Baldwin running for Congress. This is Ron Kind running from Prairie du Chien all the way up to Eau Claire.
And he's got to speak to people in small towns, and he's developed that skill. I think he had a rocky start to his career. He didn't find a place for himself. I think he'd be the most credible statewide candidate for both the Senate and for the governorship. I think
if they coalesce around him, I mean, one of the problems you always get is that if there's a primary, John, you'll know this.
I've been through primaries.
We've been through these, both of us. We people who are a little closer to the middle, we don't often win those contested primaries. So, let me say this. I think it as long as it's competent, this is going to be if the signatures happen, it's a referendum on Walker, and people are going to vote yay or nay on him. As long as the Democrat's not a complete idiot.
And this is interesting, but there were a number of other names that were being tossed about here for potential Democratic challengers. Even former Congressman Dave Obey said, I want Scott Walker recalled, and I'll consider running if I have to. You don't think that's going to happen?
Whatever.
I love Dave Obey, but I don't know about the contrast.
And I don't know if people know about it. I was always kind of amazed that Obey, with his kind of grumpy style, fit in northern Wisconsin. But one of the reasons why he was so successful in Congress is that he was the most PAC-driven candidate in America. This guy, if he decides to run, he can draw on really big money. And he would be formidable.
He built a base, though, up there. And what Obey always did was he always understood that the farm team underneath him mattered, John. So he would literally he would worry about that person getting elected to the county board four counties from his home. Mm-hmm. And most electeds don't.
No. Obey said he would not be his first choice. His first choice would be Herb Kohl or Tom Barrett. Reaction?
Well, I like Herb Kohl. I just think he's a sweet man.
He's 76 years old.
Last time I saw him, he could have been blown away in a strong wind. I don't know how much there's left in that frail body of his. And every suggestion is that Tom Barrett just doesn't have another fight in him. That was suggested by his last election. He's happy in Milwaukee. One of the things
he's also up for mayor.
One of the things I always liked about Tom Barrett is he's not a contesting kind of guy. Yeah. He's not a combative guy, and this will be a rough election. I mean, I am sure the Republicans, if they have to fight for Walker, they will come at it with guns blazing. This will make that last Supreme Court race look like a picnic. This will be one nasty race.
Yeah. A couple of others, just quick react. State Senator John Erpenbach and former Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk are also apparently considering.
Nobody has ever, Joe can speak to this, there's a long list of people who try to leverage a county supervisor to the state level. And nobody's ever done it.
Well,
Rick Phelps never did it. I mean, the list is long. The guy that owns the ski resort.
Jonathan Berry.
Jonathan Berry gave it a try. The problem with county supervisor is that within the county.
County executive.
County executive. The problem is that they make a real difference. And so in the county, you have a bunch of people who hate you. They just hate you because you put the highway through their front yard. And statewide, you go up to Rhinelander and you tell them you're county executive for Dane County, and they look at you as if you're some kind of alien. They could care less. It just doesn't sell statewide. I don't know any. Joe, do you know anybody who has ever leveraged that position beyond that position?
No, they always lose.
They always lose.
They always lose. And well, yes, I can actually. Oops, we forgot one.
Ooh.
Scott Walker.
Oh, he is a Milwaukee County executive.
Well, he's Milwaukee County executive.
Yeah, but coming from Milwaukee used to be even worse than coming from Dane County in the west. You know, in the northern part of the state, there was a guy Harvey Duholm who used to always talk about pennies for Polk County and millions for Milwaukee, and they believed it.
Well, I believe that John Sharpless wouldn't run as a Democrat, but Joe Winicky, you've been known to run for office as a Democrat. Is this something that that you have your eye on?
It's beyond my pay grade. I would love to. I can't raise the money. I might run for the state assembly instead. Seriously.
Oh, all right. Well,
again, I want to see what the maps look like. And then, you know, and plus I can't come on your show once I become an announced candidate. So
once you're a candidate, yeah, that's right.
Sure you don't want to run for that open seat that Tammy's leaving?
No.
You don't want to go to Washington?
I'm sick of running in Democratic primaries where I watch the near west side of Madison blow me away and I win everywhere else.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's reality.
Well, let me also...
You can't win from the burbs in Madison.
In a related story, the Democratic Party chair, Mike Tate, says that he is expecting that his party will help run recall efforts against Republican senators, along with the attempted recall of Scott Walker. I'm trying to see here. I think the names were...
they got to be Moulton and Galloway.
Yeah, Galloway in Pam Galloway in the Wausau area, and others. And then the Republican Party said, hey, well, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to go after Democrats. So now there will be attempts after Republican senators and Democratic senators along with the recall effort of the governor. Are we ready for more recalls like this, Joe?
I think this is a mistake for the Democrats. The problem with walking around with a petition, and Joe and I have done it because you have to do it just to run for office, is that you walk up to people and they'll say, I already signed that. And they didn't.
Right.
But they think they did. So if people are walking around with petitions saying, sign this petition, you better make sure they sign the Walker petition first. I think it really will reduce the effectiveness of the Walker recall campaign if there are other people trying to run recall campaigns for local candidates.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I understand the concept because both Galloway and Moulton are seats that Democrats could easily win. I mean, Russ Decker held the one and Pat Kreitlow held the other, and those should be very winnable seats. But I have some of the same concerns on that. There was a professor at the university many years ago when we were younger that I had, David Tarr from the political science department.
Very bright man.
And more conservative than me, but he talked about mutually assured destruction. And the first thing I think of when I say, okay, it's tit for tat, if you're going to do this, we're going to do that, that's the whole concept of mutually assured destruction, and it could turn voters off. The goal should be to get Scott Walker.
We also have, in related news, Democrats have introduced a bill to restore collective bargaining rights for public employees. And I remember, Joe Winicky, this was an issue that you couldn't figure out why Democratic legislators
took so long
on that.
Should have been it being drafted while the other one was being passed.
Well, they have done it now. Representative Pocan and Senator Risser have introduced this bill this week. They don't expect it to pass with the Republican-controlled legislature, but they think it might make a difference in this recall effort.
And why that's important, I've been very upset with my former Democratic colleagues in the legislature for several years because I thought they didn't stand for anything. In the last session, I mean, the major issues were raw milk and payday lending. If you want to show a contrast that why you should vote for a Democrat or why you should vote for a Republican, you'd better lay out the issues to the public. And one way you do that is by introducing legislation and getting sponsors and saying, this is what I'm for, this is what they're for. And you know, by the way, that's the way it should be.
I don't see... they can do this. I just see this as political posturing. It's not going to pass. I understand the ritual of legislative behavior and... The opposition, the minority, it's traditional to challenge with basic legislation on their issues to create an environment for the next election. But
it's your only power, John.
I know that, but I don't. In truth, this is posturing. It's just simply posturing.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, and Joe Winicky, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, our two guests this week for The Week in Review. We will talk about some news from the national campaign trail coming up in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. A reminder that we are in our Half the Time Pledge Drive, and we are still looking for your pledges of support that could be doubled under our $1,000 Qualine Fence Challenge grant during this hour. So make your pledge now, and it could be doubled up to $1,000. WPR.org is where you can pledge online, or 888-202-2552. Make your pledge to support the kind of programming that you have come to depend on Wisconsin Public Radio. All of the coverage of state, national, and international issues that you hear on this program, and especially on The Week in Review with two guests from different political viewpoints. We are working toward a goal of 80 pledges during this hour. Won't you please be one of them? WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552. Our two Week in Review guests are Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. And I want to move on to the presidential campaign trail in just a moment. But let me bring up this issue, John Sharpless, that you were just talking about during the break. There is a state lawmaker who is going to introduce legislation that would change the way Wisconsin distributes its electoral college votes, where winner would not necessarily get all anymore as it is now. This is something that Pennsylvania was considering as well. What do you think of this?
I'm a big fan of the Electoral College, partly because I'm just a historian and I like the fact that it's part of our heritage. I know it's in recent years, particularly in the close elections that Bush and Gore was involved with, there was a lot of talk of changing it. It's one of the few sections of the Constitution that it can actually be changed by states without any change in the actual content or amendment structure of the Constitution, because it's left to states to determine how the electoral delegation will be determined. And this has often been suggested that it might be more equitable to divide the votes between the winner and the loser proportionately. And this idea does that very thing. You win by district. This would have people win by district in the state. I'm a little surprised that Democrats are opposing this, because in general, Democrats have been the most critical of the Electoral College. Republicans tend to be kind of passive on the issue. And so I'm really surprised that Democrats oppose this idea.
Do you oppose this idea, Joe?
Yes.
And why?
Simply, it elevates reapportionment beyond the ridiculous role it has now. I mean, now all of a sudden the national parties and the players are going to spend more time making sure they have a map, because for 10 years, if they get the map they want, they know they've got a better chance of winning electoral votes. And I just think that's a crazy concept. For better or worse, for 200 and some years, it's worked. We've had a couple of exceptions. I think in 1824, we had an exception. Mm-hmm. Clearly in 1876 with Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes, 2000 Al Gore. Yeah. But that's been about it.
I've heard other critics, though, say that this is blatantly partisan. The two states that are battleground states that have been going to Democrats in recent years changed the game, so it would benefit Republicans.
It's blatantly partisan. I'm shocked. I am shocked that in the current political system that a bill would be introduced that would be to the advantage of one party or the other.
And from a guy from Oostburg, which is the most Republican community in Wisconsin.
I'm simply saying that there's every election, there's a lot of grumbling about the Electoral College. A lot of people don't like it because they don't have a mascot and a football team. But seriously, I think people complain about it, and it is one of the aspects of the Constitution that can be changed relatively easily. State legislatures can decide how to apportion these votes. This is one of the solutions. Another one is that it's divided statewide proportionately. I think Kansas and Nebraska has that, where it's not divided by congressional district. It's divided by the percentage statewide difference.
Which means it's always going to be about one or two delegates apart.
Well, let's move on to the 2012 presidential race. Former Godfather Pizza CEO Herman Cain is leading in national polls. Another national poll out this week puts him ahead of Mitt Romney and Rick Perry. Why do the Republican voters like Herman Cain, do you think, John Sharpless?
Well, I think he's a fascinating guy. He's an unusual candidate, African-American, successful businessman. He's got great stage presence. He's got a sense of confidence. He's got this very simple tax plan, 999 thing, which these kind of slogans do catch on. There's a lot of problems with that proposal, not simply that it would really let the wealthy off the hook in terms of their proportion of contribution to the national revenue, but also the major problem that most economists have challenged on it is it just doesn't generate the revenue flow that's necessary to make our government work. I think he's a fascinating guy, and I understand why people are attracted to him. In some ways, if you just like fun elections, it would just be a hoot to have him run against Obama. We have two men of African American descent as our national candidates. I don't think in the long run he's going to be able to hold against other candidates. I think Mitt Romney, I keep saying this, when it all shakes out, I think he'll be the candidate. I do think some conservatives will stay home on him. That's already quite clear. There are some conservatives that just for a variety of reasons, whether it's he's a Mormon or he doesn't pass the litmus test, and they will stay home on him. They're not going to vote for Obama. And so I think he will challenge Obama seriously, but it's likely that he will lose. But he's the most viable candidate.
What's your take, Joe?
I largely agree with John's analogy and his his basic thought on it. But I do think, to add to that, I think in the end of the day, Romney will be the nominee, and I think he's a flawed candidate for the Republicans. And the reason for that is simply there seems to be roughly 60% of the population of the Republican world that just do not want him to be president, and they're doing the flavor of the month because they want anybody but Mitt Romney. Now, but here's the problem. Unless it's Santorum or somebody, they're running out of flavors. They've gone through them all. And I think, it's sounding like Iowa and New Hampshire might move their stuff into December. That's a month and a half from now. Yeah, I mean, it's happening.
I just think a lot of it's a very difficult field for most Republicans. I'm not talking about Tea Party committed right-wing members of the party, but for most Republicans, particularly the business Republican community, to warm to any of these candidates. And if you don't get the business Republicans on board, there's no money. That's it. Mm-hmm. Business Republicans drive the party in terms of money, and if they don't have faith in these candidates, there's other things to do in a tight economy with your money. And if they don't see a candidate here that's viable at the national level and competitive, it doesn't matter if he passes the Rush Limbaugh test.
Which Mitt, I guess, doesn't.
Well, Chris Christie endorsed Mitt Romney this week. Is that going to make a big difference?
I think it helps a little bit. I was talking to a young man the other day who's thinking about running in the Democratic primary in the seat vacated by Tammy Baldwin, and he asked me whether or not endorsements were important. I think Joe can speak to this, I'm sure. I think they help a bit more in primaries. I don't think they make any difference in that in general elections.
They help in a primary, not in a general. Yeah. I agree with that. By the way, I just got to say this just to tick off some of your listeners. If the Republicans keep beholden to the Tea Party, which is clearly now a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, it will be the doom for the next 20 years of the Republican Party. These guys are so far out in outer space, it makes no sense. Sharpless, I don't know how you can support that.
Look, you guys have those goofballs on marching around.
I know,
Wall
they're
Street.
In Wall Street right now.
These guys,
But they're not accepting us.
There's a whole bunch of people out of my generation who are lefties who wander around looking for the next demonstration.
And for the record, I don't have sandals, Birkenstocks, or any of those wool socks.
Well, I have to ask. So you don't think, John Sharpless, that this Occupy movement, which is hitting other Wisconsin cities this week, and Appleton and Milwaukee and other cities are going to start their Occupy movements, is this going to play any role at all in the presidential race?
No, they don't have a... I understand they're grumpy and angry, and they want to blame Wall Street. America has blamed Wall Street for all its problems for decades. They don't want that, and they're in many ways they're very much like the Tea Party on the other extreme. They want to let the average American off the hook. The ordinary guy, it's not his fault that he's in debt. The ordinary guy is not at fault that he overleveraged his house. He's probably not at fault about the job he lost, but there's a lot of decisions that guy made in his own life that are coming due right now, and you can't blame Wall Street, and you can't blame Obama, and you can't blame George Bush, and you can't blame the Chinese. Why don't Americans just admit that they have squandered many of their resources over the past 50 years?
Your thoughts on whether this is going to have any role in the are the Occupy?
Yeah, because John and I were about to start to disagree, but I'm not sure. I think it has the potential of being a major force because it becomes a rallying point for people who aren't terribly happy with Obama, but would never support these goofballs that are running on the Republican side. And if they become an organized force in the next, 6 months, they have the potential of playing. The other thing they do is they help highlight the differences between groups. And this, I'll say one thing about the Wall Street group. I don't know if Occupy Wall Street makes sense, but We're the 99%ers does make sense. Because it highlights the fact that over the last 30 years, we've been continuing to add more and more wealth and concentrate wealth almost to the level of the Gilded Age. And at the same time, we're the middle classes. I think the Wall Street Journal today came out and said that we've lost 7%, middle class has lost 7% of its worth in the last few years. That resonates with people because most people, including me, by the way, do not have the resources I had even a few years ago.
I'm very pessimistic right now about the economy and its potential for recovery. I don't think the stimulus packages, they're out of the dark ages of American economic theory, the notion that you can buy your way out of recessions. And the Republican agenda on the recession is an old mantra of low taxes. If we give our money to rich people, they'll invest it and then they'll hire us back. Both those mantras are old, they're burnt out, and the economists are letting us down. They don't have a new solution. I think the solutions that are on the table for the economy fall way short. But there's something deeper here, and I often lecture on this. There's been, since the Depression, a broad agreement, rich and poor, that we will not challenge each other on our accomplishments and our accumulation of wealth as long as the pie gets bigger. So rich people can have a large wedge of the pie, but every year my small wedge gets bigger and bigger, and so my life is better. The pie is getting smaller now. By the way, it's getting smaller for our rich as well. And that makes the rich and poor issue very acute. And it also turns races against one another. Mm-hmm. It turns regions against one another, turns states against one another. Are we supposed to be bitter if a company goes to Minnesota and not to Wisconsin? You look down the block and the guy gets a new car and you hate him because he's got a new car. This could be very troubling for our society. We like to think of ourselves competitive, but we don't like to think of ourselves as mean-spirited when we lose.
Mm-hmm. Joe, do you have anything to add before we go to break?
I think his analogy is good. The only thing I would say is, I mean, who would have guessed, and to add to his point, who would have guessed even 5 years ago that people would be successful at making teachers an enemy?
Well, let's think about that as we go to break. This is The Week in Review. Joe Winicky is a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. John Sharpless is a professor of history at UW-Madison. Want to report that we have used up that $1,000 challenge grant from Qual Line Fence. Thank you very much for all of your pledges, and thanks to Qual Line Fence for the $1,000 challenge grant. And while we have reached that challenge grant, we still haven't reached our goal of 80 pledges during this hour. So we do continue to ask you to make your support known to Wisconsin Public Radio by going online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and make a pledge of any amount to support the programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for the Week in Review quiz. Here's the question. New data this week from the Credit Bureau Experian shows Wisconsinites know how to manage their money. Which Wisconsin city has the highest average credit rating in the nation? Which Wisconsin city has the highest average credit rating in the nation? If you know, 1-800-642-1234. You can call in and leave your answer, and we will choose a winner from all of the correct answers and send you a fabulous prize. You have the next 5 minutes or so to call in your answer or email it, talk@wpr.org, and we will let you know at the end of the program. the answer and the winner. So let's move on to some other issues. We have to cover a lot in a little time here. Congress issued subpoenas to get information from Attorney General Eric Holder about this Fast and Furious issue, an effort to build cases against Mexican drug lords that ended up allowing guns to be getting into their hands. John Sharpless, what do you make of this? Any thoughts on this Fast and Furious scandal?
This is the goofiest thing that our national law enforcement ever cooked up, that they would allow guns to move into the hands of violent gangs in Mexico. The notion that you can trace these guns, it's just I don't know who came up with this, but they should retire. I can't believe you would do this. And by the way, it would be wrong even if those guns had not resulted in the death of an American law enforcement officer. It's simply wrong. The notion, just think about it. We're saying that we're going to allow guns to flow to thugs who are going to kill Mexicans. Now, it turned out they also killed an American. And then we become indignant.
After the fact.
you should be indignant that they're killing Mexicans with guns that we should have interdicted those guns and not allowed them into Mexico.
Joe?
Some things better off if we don't know about, I guess. But I wonder where they got this idea. Oh, let's see, arms for hostages?
Oh, no.
I mean, the Contras and the Sandinistas and the Iranian hostages. I wonder where they got these ideas.
Yeah. So, Eric Holder is and should be in hot water here? Or?
Well, I don't know if he does. There's no indication. I don't think this happened on his watch, did it?
I think this was a mixture. And frankly, I don't think some of these things get to the highest levels.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, certainly.
That part's the witch hunt.
Certainly the buck stops at the top. And there is, by the way, in Congress, unanimity on this. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. Congress is steaming about it, as they should. In some ways, these kinds of hearings allow politicians to thump their chest and be indignant. But the truth is here, there's no legislation that would come out of this. And calling, getting the DEA and the firearms guys in an embarrassing position might be good for a week or two of headlines, and the people on that committee can go back home and say they're good members of Congress. In the long run, this doesn't change anything.
Moving on to another issue of this assassination plot, the United States Secretary of State Clinton wanting to hold Iran accountable for its alleged role in this foiled plot to assassinate the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States in the United States. How do you hold Iran accountable for this? John Sharpless, any thoughts?
I don't think you can. It seems they have the guy who actually was plotting the crime itself. As more and more information comes out about him, he's sort of a troubled man, kind of a loose cannon. His life was at wit's end. The notion that you would hire Mexican drug lords to shoot the Saudi ambassador is, again, that kind of contrivance almost equals the gun scam. It is clear, however, that he received money for this plot directly from Iran, and that it's a sizable amount of money, and it had to come from someone in Iran who was well-placed. That doesn't make it necessarily an administrative decision by the leadership.
If this comes out that there is empirical evidence that the Iranian government was involved in this, this will blow up into a huge deal. The Iranians are completely isolated. The Syrians are their only ally, and they've got their own troubles. And, of course, we're so beholden to Saudi Arabia, it stinks. I see this having the potential of taking a region that's going through its Arab Spring and is completely unsettled and blowing it up into another powder keg. I really do. I'm worried about this.
All right. Well, some on the left fear that this is kind of trumped up to be an excuse to initiate some sort of military action.
Where are they coming from? We got all our troops in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. I guess you can move some from Iraq. That's not so far, but I mean, we are stretched to the limit on our military. The last thing we want is a three-front war.
And I think that I get tired of these conspiracy theories. You know, this seems fairly straight. The administration in Washington seems to be fairly confident that they have a guy. Admittedly, he might be a lone wolf. They do have direct evidence of money transfers. I don't see this as some kind of secret plot to start another war. And it just...
But it might have been a secret plot to take out an ambassador.
Yeah, but I really don't see it as... And by the way, I think that Clinton has a lot of... I mean, not Clinton. That shows you where I am. I'm living in the past. Obama has a lot of things on his plate. He doesn't need another international crisis.
Well, one thing that President Obama got dealt a defeat this week, the Senate rejected his jobs bill, but polls are out there showing the public supports what's in the jobs bill. Should this have passed or not, Joe Wernicke?
Well, if it wasn't to pass, could we at least see an alternative? And if it's not to pass, why can't they at least allow it to be voted on? And then everybody is on the record saying they're for or against it. I think this 60-vote cloture rule is crazy. I didn't learn that in Mrs. Meyer's sixth-grade civics class. Mm-hmm. I thought it was majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you were in the state Senate, and you guys pulled stunts like
that. We didn't have any supermajority rules.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
We
pulled stuff, but nothing like this.
Obama had a victory this week on the trade bills, he can strut around. He's been working on those through his whole administration, and he got three trade bills through. And he worked that project as, I think, a president who has connections in Congress should have worked it. In fact, I think if he had used his power and the connections that Biden has in the Senate, he probably would have progressed on other bills. Mm-hmm. The jobs bill, I don't feel particularly sad about it because it's not going
to
generate
jobs. It's more
the
process to me.
The Democrats have to move out of the 1930s. These kind of big jobs bills do not generate the kind of jobs that challenge unemployment. Pouring concrete on a federal highway does not mean a woman who's been laid off at a realty company is going to get a job, or even a construction man who does drywall and used to be employed in the housing industry. Everybody says we got to improve our infrastructure. Yes,
disagree.
Yeah. Quick thoughts on the trade bills that did pass this week.
This might be good a chance to strut around, but it certainly isn't popular in Obama's base.
Yeah. With the trade bill?
Yeah. Most of organized labor, with the exception of the UAW, with the Korean trade, they look at the trade bill, the free trade pact with Colombia, and these are the guys who are killing labor union leaders. They don't buy it.
I need to report that Arnold in Oshkosh is our quiz winner. Congratulations to Arnold. He correctly guessed Wausau, Wisconsin, the city
Wausau.
That
I would have guessed Oostburg, those Dutch
Wausau.
Reformers.
Yeah. Well, I guess the national average credit score is 749. Wausau has 789 as its highest in the nation.
Maybe Friesland, where they don't buy anything unless they've saved for it.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Week in Review. I want to thank both of you for being with us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
Joe Wernicke is a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Bill Martens, and our roving pledge reporter, Kathy Berenger, is in with this breaking pledge drive update. Hi,
Good
Kathy.
Good morning. I just wanted to stop in and let everyone know we're now up to over $544,000, which is fantastic. Thank you so much. But to raise that $1 million in half the time we usually take, we need to hear from you now. We only have 3 days left, and we're counting on you to come through for us like you always do. Can't wait to hear from you.
Either can I. Thank you very much, Kathy. So help us make this half the time pledge drive a success here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It will be a win for you, too, because it means that maybe we can do this in half the time. And that gives you more programming in the future and less on-air fundraising. WPR.org is where you can pledge online, or 888-202-2552. And Bill Martins, we have a goal of 80 pledges for this hour, and we have a ways to go.
Yes, we've got 61 pledges that we need in the next 6 minutes. So a tall task, but not going to say it's impossible. It's very possible. If you haven't made your pledge yet and you're listening right now, to go to your computer, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make that pledge of support, whatever the amount. We appreciate it. We'll make sure it goes to great things such as the programming you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio to make sure that they're running good and strong. So one more time, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, you know, I hope you enjoyed our weekend review with John Sharpless and Joe Winicky. The last time we had John and Joe paired together, we heard from a number of you who were really happy to hear those two different perspectives discussing and debating issues in a civil manner. And we really appreciated hearing from you, and we brought them back in part because you said, please have them on again together. If you appreciate hearing two different perspectives at once and the Week in Review, where we talk about all of the news of the week in 1 hour, do make your pledge now to let us know. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Of course, Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. All right, you don't have to pay for it. But think about what you would pay if you had to. What would you pay if you had? Would you pay $5 a month, $10 a month? What about a dollar a day?
You can decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your contribution will be used to support the programs that you hear every day on this station. So contribute now. You decide how much, be it that $5 a month or $10 a month or a dollar a day, and help make this half the time pledge drive a success.
You're driving around right now. Maybe you're at home or you're at work listening to the Week in Review, listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now's a great time to make that pledge. Still looking for 60 more pledges in the next 4 minutes to meet that goal of 80. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we really got off to a quick start, we started off with a bang because we had a $1,000 challenge grant from Qualine Fence, thanks to Qualine, and that $1,000 challenge grant was matched just about right away. So thank you to all of you who have pledged so far during this hour, but now we still are working toward that goal. These hourly goals are very important to reach if we're going to make this half the time pledge drive a success. So make your pledge of any amount. Every single pledge helps pay for the programming. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it really only takes about 2 to 3 minutes of your time. You'll get in, you'll log in or make the call, give you just some basic contact information, how much you'd want to pay, and et cetera. It's really very painless. And then you're done. And if 59 more of you do that in the next couple of minutes, we'll meet that goal for this hour and help ensure that the Week in Review will be as high quality as it has been as of late. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Alyssa from Winona, Minnesota, who has pledged to Wisconsin Public Radio. I have been listening to Wisconsin Public Radio for so many years and felt guilty every year that the drive would come and go and I'd still not given my support. I felt like I was stealing. Now that I'm a sustainer, I feel great and never have to worry about not giving my share to something that I truly value. Thank you, Alyssa. A sustaining member, Bill, is somebody who signs up for monthly installments through their credit card or perhaps through their checking account.
And then you never have to worry about whether you have made your part. You know that money is going to WPR, and it all just kind of happens automatically there. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks again. If you have already pledged to Wisconsin Public Radio, if you have not, please do consider making that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We may not make that goal of 80, but let's get as close as possible with your help. It is our Half the Time Pledge Drive, and it will not be successful without your help. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.